Thank you for hosting a lot of these conversations and just recreating that space. The idea that you guys have of creating these conversations to help, you know, show that dynamic of what a healthy relationship can look like. I just love you guys for that. So thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for that. And thank you for, you know, considering us part of that idea. You know, I'm glad that you don't think that we're dysfunctional.
Welcome to Souls of Hip Hop,
a podcast for hip hop heads that aims to bring inspiring people together to share their wisdom, passion, and unique stories. My name is Candy.
And I'm DJ Razorcut.
And together we are Solidarity.
Connecting souls organically.
What's up, fam? Thanks for tuning in.
This is my beautiful wife, Carla Silvera Hernandez. I've known her for 11 years now. She's really inspiring and motivating to me. She's helped me so much in my career. And from the day we met, she's just been there for me. She's pushed me to pass my boundaries where I thought I was going and took me to another level and another place in my life. And I'm just really appreciate her for everything she's done for me and everything that we will do together.
And this is Artson. Artson is from El Paso originally. He is an indigenous hip hop artist, someone who I think very much embodies the spirit of hip hop. And, you know, when I look at what has attracted me to him, it's specifically because for me, like, he is that embodiment of hip hop. He's been a member of some of the most influential crews in breaking, but always from the perspective of being a student of the culture. Things that I love about him is that he's not one-dimensional. He's not just a b-boy or just a beatboxer or just an MC. He's multidisciplinary. He respects all disciplines. He brings in his indigenous culture into everything that he does and encourages everyone to get in touch with their own individual culture and find a way to weave that into how they express, you know, through their various art forms. He's someone that just has this amazing way of bringing the best out of people, inspiring people, making people feel like it's okay to be themselves, to just be okay with not being perfect and to just being, you know, students of the journey themselves. True story here, when we met, I used to go back and forth to Vegas a lot from Cali to visit my family. And of course I connected with the community out there. And while we had met, it was like very much like in passing. But, you know, every time I would be sitting down in conversations with people, they would be telling me about Arts and be like, yo, you should check out his music. He's really dope. He's actually like really high level. And again, he never really said, he didn't even tell me he was doing music. It just other people had told me. I cannot tell you how many people said something like, I don't know where I would be without Arts and oh, Arts and he's just, and I was like, it's like everyone had an Arts and testimonial of some kind, right? So of course I was like, all right, like that's cool. I have to, it encouraged me to trust his character. And I think as a B-girl, someone, a woman in the culture, depending on where you come from, sometimes you can feel apprehensive about how men within the culture show up and making sure that you're very clear in terms of the parameters. And so that for me was really reassuring. And it made me curious about his music. It made me curious to just get to know him. And then just in every time I've ever interacted with him, that's exactly how he showed up. And the way I've always described him is he's that pool of still, cool water, right? If there's something going on, I can immediately tell how I'm responding because he's so still that it allows me to reflect on how I'm showing up. So he's my anchor in many, many, many storms. My partner in crime, you know, my partner in laughter is the way that I would say it. So, you know.
That was beautiful. Oh my gosh.
So how did the two of you meet?
At the time, I was teaching Bale Rock. I don't know if you guys know Bale Rock. I was his first teacher. A friend of mine was shooting a music video, and she wanted dancers, and so I told her I'd bring Bale. And we showed up to the music video set, and she was there. She had been asked to be a part of the video also, so she came from Cali. Yeah, we were both on the music set together, and that's how we first met, and we just like crossed paths and kind of just talked a little bit, and then we kept running into each other after that, like a few times at different events. She was coming, like she said, she was coming down to Vegas, and we'd cross paths a few times. Eventually, we exchanged numbers, actually at freestyle session. I was like, yeah, when you're in Vegas, hit me up. She came down. We hung out a couple of times, and then we just started, I guess, just being friends and like building a relationship. And she kind of just like bum rushed into like taking my career somewhere. She's like, oh, you do music? Next thing I know, my music was on Pandora and Last FM. And she's like, I did this for you. And I was like, what? And I was like, okay, she's doing things. Like, I see, you know. And after that, I was like, okay, this is something special. Like, nobody's ever just like taking the reins and been like, we're gonna go this way with anything I did. And I was just like, I gotta bow down to that. And I saw like who she was, and like I was like, this is special. So
yeah, so we met. Our friend's name is Yuthi, and she's an MC, female MC, from Vegas, and they had done a couple of tracks together. I would say that, like, regarding the context of the time, that was tail end of, actually it was 2009, economic downturn, et cetera. So I had actually been laid off from my job as an online strategist, an associate account manager. And there was a part of me that felt like my career was moving away from my passion, which is really about creative and community entertainment, arts and culture. So, you know, considering the time frame of the year, the economic downturn, there wasn't necessarily a lot of like full-time jobs available. So I took the time specifically with the intention to, one, build out more of a portfolio that would take me more in the line of the career that I wanted to build for myself. And at the same time, I'd lived all over the world growing up, and having come to the United States when I was about 11 or 12 years old was pretty much all East Coast. But I had a lot of family out here on the West Coast that I hadn't had a chance to be a really active member of their lives, you know, so I wanted to spend more time with them, and they were out in Vegas. So that's why I was in Vegas. And the more that I kind of connected with the people and saw the opportunity with him, where I really liked his music. You know, when we finally met, and again, it was in passing, it was friends. He was that safe person, you know, to meet up with, to go session with, practice with, build with. Really liked the music. We would try to do research to see where he was online. And of course, all those things needed work. And I was like, well, here's a wonderful opportunity to collaborate. You know, like, let me go ahead and, you know, great. He'll be a client. I can, you know, get some hands-on portfolio, you know, for myself, and at the same time build him up. You know, and then somewhere along the ways, you know, what started as like a really focused kind of business partnership, other things started to pop up. And it was funny because, you know, as soon as those other things started to pop up, I immediately got defensive. I was like, wait a minute, you're supposed to be in the homie box, right? Like, there's supposed to be a very strict line here, you know, so then we had to kind of work through all that stuff and figure out like, okay, like, let's build from a point of trust and still, again, with that passion for the things that we both wanted to achieve and felt like we could achieve successfully together. So from day one, it started as collaborators and partners. So yeah, the work is kind of like led to the love, I guess is the way to put it.
How would your parents describe what you do?
Well, it's funny. I actually had a lot of fun when I saw that question. I was like, this is gonna be great. I'm gonna ask them exactly what do they say? You know, because I was actually very curious about it. I think for him, it's a little bit more clear. So when I asked my mom, she got very tickled and very enthusiastic. And she said, oh, well, I tell people that you change lives through health and wellness with your company, and that you create opportunities for people, and that you're a very strong woman, and, you know, not to be messed with, and you're very successful. And you're, you know, so she went that route, which I thought was very cute, because you could tell the excitement and the pride. And I was like, for her to lead with, I change lives through health and wellness, was cool. And then she also was, you know, saying how she talks about how artistic, you know, we both are, and that we weave that into what we do. And then my dad, of course, was like much more concise. Typically what he tells people is that I'm an executive within, you know, my company, and that I work essentially in marketing, and I'm the voice of how our company shows up in the rest of the world and makes sure that we're focused on the right things and communicating and representing in a positive way. So I thought that was really insightful, and, you know, I was like, all right, cool. They kind of know, but I was very curious to see if they, you know, what would they lean to? Would they talk about me as the professional, or would they talk about me as the personal and some of the other things that I do? So
for me, I think my parents would just say, they would say I'm an artist. You know, they would try to talk about all the things that I do. You know, oh, he dances, he plays the flute, he raps, he makes music, and he teaches kids. He travels to different places and teaches kids and tries to encourage them to follow their dreams. And they would say those things. And for me personally, now that I know that they see me like that, it's special to me, because as a kid, it was everything they tried to keep me from. They were like, get a job, you know, you need to go to work, you need to go to get your education, they try to force me to do those things. And I was just rebelling against the world at my youthful years. But it was always my goal for them to see me that way. And it took me, you know, a long time of my life to achieve that. You know, most of my life went to trying to prove to them. Now that they seem like that, it's a really special thing. And you know, I love them for that.
I think like our generation definitely went through that with our folks, like, oh, you know, don't get involved with hip hop or breaking. Mm-hmm. Like that's a negative thing. It's going to be a mark on you, so to speak. But it's funny, like now fast forward where my parents, I think, have recognized how my involvement with hip hop culture in the community has actually been a distinguishing factor in my career and how I show up in my career and has opened opportunities for me because of who I am and how I represent. Some of the things that they see me doing with the community and seeing like breaking reach the level that it has, you know, where it's not this stigmat kind of thing. It's more accepted. And now they say that they're really proud to see us working in the space, you know, and that is really rewarding for them to see something that they used to tell us, try to discourage us from. Now they see it as like, we're proud of you for what you've done and for sticking to it and for helping people change their mind about what it is. Like my mom is a huge fan of Artson's music, you know, and she wishes all hip hop rappers were as positive as him. And it's funny, like, you know, now that she knows Artson, now she tries to say that she, you know, old school hip hop, but I promise you back in the day, that's not exactly what it was, but you know, she changed his mind about what hip hop could actually mean. So
I think that's our generation, you know, it was so new that it was, what is this? You know, what where can this lead? There was no road paved. So it was like, where is this going to lead you in the world? You know, like our parents grew up with security and like, this is the things you need to do in order to provide for your family. And you know that. So when they seen this new thing and like, we're trying to dedicate our lives to it, it was like a scary thing. I can understand that now. As a kid, I didn't understand it. I loved it. It made me happy. Why don't you like it? Why aren't you agreeing with me? You know, but now that we have people that are successful in all kinds of ways, not just, you know, there's all kind of room for people to be successful in hip hop, that parents now, they encourage it. You know, you see it with the kids, they encourage the youth to like pursue it because they know that there's all kind of avenues, you know. So I can understand their view at the time and their lens that they were seeing me through. So, but I appreciate that because it pushed me, you know, it was motivating. It made me want to like, I need to do this, you know, and I'm going to prove to everybody that I'm right, you know, so.
Well, you sure have proved them right.
Dreaming of this moment ever since I was a shorty on the block and at the parties, getting open with the homies. It was more than just a vision, it became the way we live, and having fun and acting dumb, get your skills up was the mission. Was hard to listen to the drama when they said to stop, keep it moving while I'm grooving and I'm reaching for the top. You could catch me when I'm flying if you look up at the sky. Hey kid, walk straight, master your high. I let go of the ego, this was given to the people. Now I'm soaring like an eagle, cause I know that we are equal. Spread these wings and let it be, didn't know I'd be so free. Chasing things I couldn't see, but this I know and I believe. It's better when we're together and I'm not much of a quitter. I still feel like a kid, but I'm not a new beginner. It's just a new beginning, took some time to get it popping. And this one's for my people who will never be forgotten. Let's go get up, let's go get them. Was a young and it was something we were loving, and we wouldn't let it go. We were always into something, this, that, or the other. Practice breaking with my brothers, and I always knew that one day that we would be discovered. So I put it on the wall with a can of Ultra Flatback, chasing all them honeys who were thick and had a fat back. Excuse me for them words, but it was you that made me better. I wanted to be dope when you were looking with no pressure. Every day I gave my all to the skills that we were rocking, until they gave me chills and I knew that you were jocking. That's right, get it tight and never let it fold. Take flight, break light and let your spirit grow. This could be forever if we never let it fade. Promise we'd be together ever since the second grade. I know it took a minute, but the beats are steady rocking. Now this one's for my people who will never be forgotten. Let's go get up, let's go get 'em, let's go get up, let's go get 'em. Everybody get up.
get up. This a new beginning. This a new beginning. This a new beginning. I'm a break star.
About your youthful days and hip-hop, do you remember your first encounter with hip-hop culture and what drew you into it?
I first ran into it and it was like around 82 or 83. My parents were divorced when I was 5 and my dad met my stepmother. We moved into her home, which was a new neighborhood for me. My brother, we went outside a couple houses down to the neighbors, and there was a couple of the neighborhood kids. They were doing backspins, which I didn't even know what it was at the time. It just looked like fun, and that's the first time I saw, and I participated in. I wanted to have the most spins on the block, you know, and then we just kept doing it, trying different tricks, learning different tricks, me not knowing what it was, and then slowly starting to get educated, like, oh, this is breaking. And then this is a part of something else. And then the movies came out. So I got to see all the movies in the theater, Breaking 2, Beat Street, Flashdance. I got to see all those in the theater. So to me, that was like superhero. It was like Superman stuff, you know, like this is the movie stuff. Like what I'm doing is like that, you know, and that's when I fell in love. You know, I fell in love with it. And it gave me a sense of connection, family. I didn't grow up with my culture, even though I'm so in tune now. I didn't grow up with it. So I think that's why I'm so hungry for it, because I didn't have it as a youth. The word culture, to me, it only made sense through hip hop at the time when I was young, because nobody was telling me stories or anything about my history. So this was the one thing that was mine. I knew from such a young age that this is it. This is what I'm going to do. This is what I'm going to do forever. You know, okay? At the time, I didn't have anything in my life that made me as happy. There was nothing. I loved playing sports. I loved doing those things, but we couldn't afford for me to be in sports programs or martial arts or anything like that. So this was the free that I could do with my friends that made me crazy happy and just gave me such an incredible joy and escape from my reality that I knew that I was like, this is it. This is what I'm doing forever.
I feel like mine was, first of all, I would say it was staggered. And then just like, I think again, that's one of those good examples of how we're such polar opposites. Like from him, it was like, since he was a tiny little kid and it was consistent for him.
You grew up in a military connected family. What did that mean for you?
First of all, I wasn't really immersed in American culture necessarily. Secondly, when I was living abroad, very often there was like social political situations that also meant that we were a bit more confined in terms of what we were exposed to. So that being said, I believe in Spain, my earliest memories date back to maybe me being like 3 years old and whatnot. And so we were living in Spain. I remember when Breaking came out and I remember when Breaking 2 came out, and that was what I would consider my very first like exposure to it. And of course was utterly obsessed with those films. You know, it was everything to me. But then my dad had us really involved. My dad was really big into horses and equestrian sports. So, you know, very often just like Sasha, for example, she's grown up around breaking her whole life because that happens to be what your personal passion is, right? So imagine for my father, it was horses and that's where we spent most of our time. From there, like we lived in Venezuela, you know, dance for me had already kind of come in as something that I very much loved and appreciated, but it was really more about the cultural dances and the celebration. And I was always about dancing with my dad, dancing with my friends. But again, it was all like more Latino culture based. The first time that I remember personally hearing hip hop was probably like 89 or 90. And I was at my cousin's, you know, we were kind of on our way to the Philippines. We were moving from Venezuela to the Philippines and we were at somebody's house party and they were playing hip hop. And I could not stop moving. Like my legs, I remember, were like super cramped up at the end because I was just this little wild kid jumping around, like feeling it or whatever, you know, and like my My cousin was like teaching me some of like the old school moves, like Running Man, Roger Rabbit, whatever, like basic stuff. And I was teaching her like, you know, the dances that I knew, like the Latino dances that she maybe didn't know. And friendly thing to mention here is that when me and my cousin used to be little kids, I'm talking like six, we were definitely a little competitive, you know, when it came to like family dance offs and stuff, you know, stuff like that. So when I got to the Philippines, they used to have a lot of these like music variety shows, right? So we were still like staying in this one hotel called the Mabuhay Inn, which is like when you first get there as a military family, that's where you stay until they find housing for you. And, you know, within those first couple of days or weeks, I was watching one of the variety shows and this female MC came on. I remember she was like all dressed in white, baggy clothes, you know, buttoned down, whatever. Super fanged out bangs with like the big poofy hair, and she was rapping. And I remember like being like, to this day, I'm still trying to figure out if I can track down exactly what her name was and who she was. But that was the first time that I saw hip hop as a performance in terms of like finding out that breaking was actually still something that people did and not just something that I saw in movies. That didn't happen until I was a 17-year-old sophomore in college at UF, right? There was this guy that had moved down. His name was Jesse. He'd come from Boston and he had, you know, a B-Boy Summit video, right? And he was a B-Boy and, you know, some of the homies, like they had all kind of started this little crew in Gainesville. And that for me was like, oh. So of course, that's kind of where it started for me in terms of being able to connect to the culture and the live community here in the US, right? So like I said, there's different pockets and little bits of exposure, but in terms of like where it really became a significant part of my life, I was already like 17 on the brink of turning 18. And I actually didn't have time for anything after school because all I did was ride horses. I was highly competitive when it came to equestrian sports at the time. I was supposed to represent the Philippines in the Junior Asian Games at one point, you know, so that was all consuming. So it wasn't really until college that there was a little bit more of what my family wanted me to do and the person that they wanted me to be. And when I actually had an opportunity to just connect my own personal passions and what that turned into. And, you know, the rest is history, I think.
Wait, you went to UF? I thought you went to FSU.
Girl, I did the Florida tour. I actually started at UF. Let's just say that first year didn't go so well. So I went from UF to FSU. But then when my sister graduated FSU that last year, I really didn't enjoy being in Tallahassee. So then I went back, you know, to Gainesville, where I finished up my AA. But on top of that, for me, it was always about having a competitive internship because I always felt like that was going to be more valuable, right? Like Gainesville just like they had one television station, they had one radio station, they had one newspaper. And so I made it a point to transfer back down to Miami and go to FIU specifically because I wanted to make sure that I had an internship, you know, locked in. And that would be what would distinguish me from other college graduates out the gate. That's how it went. So I literally did the Florida tour.
Arson, on your last album, Brave Star, you start out saying, "It took me a minute to find the strength to be brave enough to accept my power and shine my light." Can you share how you found your strength and courage?
I think it's been a lot of letting go from a lot of different places within me. There was a lot of my life spent in guilt from things that I did as a young kid. I spent a lot of time chasing this dream that I'm in. I spent a lot of time trying to get here the fast way, trying to force the issue. I lived with a lot of guilt, but it was letting go of all that. And really it started when I met Carla. Even at that time, I was still like involved in things that probably I shouldn't have. Not nothing I regret because it's made me who I am. It's made me the man I am and gave me the experiences that I have. It kind of brought that whole idea of shedding in all aspects of my life. So I shed people, shed friends, shed family, shed a lot of things that weren't helping me. If it's not helping me, why am I going to do it? You know, like personally, you know, so it just took that time to realize that I'm a good person, that I'm okay. You know, that I can do these things and that dreams can't happen for me. Success can't happen for me. You know, I am good at these arts that I'm doing, you know, all those things, you know, once I was able to let go of a lot of the pain that I was carrying. So looking at myself and being okay with myself, you know, I guess, you know, just healing myself, healing my spirit, healing my mental, healing my physical. And yeah, so that's really everything that I'm talking about. It's really the album, even the title, Brave Star, it's about being brave, you know, being brave to be the star that you are, you know, the light that you are. I feel that when somebody finds their peace or their light to express that to the community, you have to kind of be brave to do it, because you're going to get ridiculed, people are going to judge you, and also you're going to have to be strong enough to hold that space, because it's a responsibility. It's a huge responsibility to walk in your light amongst your community, because people are watching, you know, they're watching your steps and watching what you're doing. So yeah, that's kind of where all that comes from. It's just like me looking at myself, me looking at my spirit and wanting it to shine as bright as it can.
From my understanding, you're a descendant of the Tarahumara people. Could you share with us what you think people should know about Indigenous hip hop artists, and maybe shed some light on some common misperceptions that you are faced with?
Hip hop, there's a reason why it was created here in the States. I feel like there's a certain spirit, and I feel it's globally amongst Indigenous people and tribal people, but because it was created here, it's a spirit more than the title hip hop. It's a certain spirit that it comes with the people coming together to express themselves through these arts that we have. And we've been doing it for thousands of years. You know, we've been listening to the drum, you know, we've been singing and telling our stories. We've been dancing and putting our hands on the earth to feel it and to connect with it, and also dancing with the stars. We've been aligning like that for forever. We've been painting and telling our stories on mountains that tell the story of history forever. These are the things that our people do and are gravitated towards. And also, it brings you a joy. It brings you a certain happiness when you do these things. And without them, when you're not expressing like that, your spirit suffers and you could feel it. You need to do it. You need to express. And so I feel like that is Indigenous hip hop, because around the world, it's the same story. It's the same thing. And we come together and we get in this circle. We create this circle. If you see tribal dances or tribal people and they're playing a drum and the dance happens, it naturally forms that circle, because it could be because of circular energy. You know, it could be two people and there's circular energy within them. That is what Indigenous hip hop is. You know, that's what it is. As far as the misconceptions is that, you know, there's people out there that don't even know that we're still around. Straight up, that, oh, there's still Indians, you know, like that. That's a thing, you know, like that's really a thing. And so, well, why aren't you wearing feathers? And, you know, why don't you have, you know, a leather skirt on, or do you shoot a bow and arrow? Like those things are like, you know, there's typical stereotypes of those things, you know. But it was not like from the beginning I was like, I'm an Indigenous hip hop artist, you know, like I was just the kid doing it like for a long time, you know. And even when I met Carla, I kind of wasn't even accepted into the Indigenous hip hop world. I was already just doing hip hop. I had already worked with people that I looked up to and that I respected. Like at the time, I had already worked with like Craig G, Tash from Alcoholics, Planet Asia, Wild Child. I had already worked with these amazing people, but it was never like, this is Indigenous hip hop. It was just like, this is hip hop. Then I started like seeing the Indigenous hip hop world, and I was like, dang, like we were already speaking these ways like amongst the homies. Like we're like, okay, we're doing this thing that's ancient. And I already knew about some Indigenous hip hop jams that had happened in history. Shout out to the Frijo family, Keith MC and Brian, who did a Culture Shock. And there was already jams, native jams that brought all the elements together. But when I saw that there was a movement within MCs that were like, this is Indigenous hip hop. I remember there was a time where me and Carla had a conversation. I was like, I need to be recognized by my people. This is what I need to do, you know? And so I went, I was like, this is what I gotta do. And I started like trying. And then I kind of got accepted into that world of indigenous hip hop music. I feel like grateful for it. I'm really grateful for it. And at the same time, I also like tell people in the indigenous world, because there'll be times where it's almost like I'm put in that box now. Like, yo, you're an indigenous hip hop artist. And I'm like, no, I'm a hip hop artist that is indigenous. I'm hip hop before anything, because I didn't even grow up with my culture like that. It was hip hop that led me to my culture. And in all reality, it was Black culture that led me to my indigenous roots to lead me into where I am at today. If I didn't grow up in the hood and I didn't grow up with my homies that were teaching me about Black history, and they were the ones that were made me feel proud to learn about my people. It was my older homies that were like, yo, that's dope, you're learning about all these people, but you need, what about your people? And, you know, I'm grateful for all of that that led me to my understanding of who I am, you know, my overstanding of who I am.
And you were recognized with the Best Narrated Music Video for the Native American Music Awards.
Yeah, in 2017, I got my first Native American Music Award. It was for the Never Give Up video. It was Keys IMC and Superman. And then the following year, we got the Best Hip Hop Rap Award for the Brave Star album. And then the next year, we were at the Indigenous Music Awards in Canada. And yeah, it's been an amazing journey just to like be recognized like that from my people. I feel even getting my first award, it was like, dang, this is like super special. Like, first award I get is by my people. Like, you know, it was like a huge deal for me. You know, like, this is really important. You know, amazing.
How about you, Carla? Did hip hop allow you to connect with your roots?
You know, I'm someone that grew up around the world, but I'm Cuban and I'm Filipino, and I always thought that I knew my culture and my roots because, I grew up with a lot of my Filipino family members. We shared meals together, et cetera. But then there was a certain point where I came to realize that because we'd grown up as military folks that grew up all over the world, a lot of that had really been diluted, and it was almost like just a level of awareness. Like, my family traditions don't necessarily fully capture my Filipino culture. Some of the things that I want to do is even, there's a documentary film that I want to work on that I've started to piece together that starts to touch on, there's hip hop culture, there's hip hop history, but it's also like, let's break it down. Filipinos have been, you know, highly influential in the world of hip hop across the board, whether it's dance, various factions of dance, whether it's breaking, choreo, DJs, MCs, and other artists. But meanwhile, I know very little, in fact, about how hip hop started in the Philippines and that culture specifically to them. Clearly it exists and I know it's there. Like I said, the first MC I ever saw was a female MC in the Philippines. And then that was, so it's a lot of curiosity and just realizing that, you know, there's a cultural history just in terms of our indigenous ethnic roots, but then there's also, how does that fit into this overall fabric of hip hop culture? It's an area that I find immensely interesting, you know, and that's just really something that I hope that we can all collectively do a lot more and share a lot more about, you know.
I think it's important for us to realize that hip hop is calling you to find yourself. And it doesn't matter what walk of life you come from. It's asking you to look past yourself, behind yourself. It's asking you to tap in with your ancestors. It's asking you to tap in with what they did for you to be here and how they probably did some of the things that you're doing. Like, I'm sure all of our ancestors danced, you know, and they felt a certain way, you know. They I'm sure they all had dreams of doing something. You know, maybe they played an instrument. Maybe they were in a band. Maybe they used to paint. You know, maybe they did these things. It's asking us to do that. And I feel like we can't forget that. Sometimes I feel that B-boys and B-girls get caught up in so much of the breaking aspect of it, like wanting to learn the history of moves and skill, the skill of it, you know. But it's so much more. It's so much deeper than just dancing, you know. And like, if you're thinking that hip hop is like breaking is hip hop, yes, but it's only a part. And it's really asking you to learn about yourself. And I think we need to remember that, especially right now in these times. It's there for us to grow.
What I love is that it encourages us to connect with those things, but at the same time, we bring it to life in a modern interpretation. And it's the thing that brings us all together. It creates like a level of cultural exchange, you know, openness and acceptance that I honestly don't think that any one of us can think of anything else in the world that creates that kind of a bridge, right? Like, how often do you go to these events or have gone to events where it's a whole group of people from literally all over the world? Most of them don't speak the same language, but yet there's a conversation, that exchange that happens inside of a cipher where we understand what's happening in that cipher. No words exchanged. And half the time we create lifelong friendships internationally based on sharing that space, you know, and sharing that love and sharing that passion, you know, just like you were saying, Candy, right? Like, your house became a hostel. I can't tell you how many people have stayed with me, you know, over the years, you know, right? And you literally look forward to these events because you're going to see all your friends from around the world and everyone's going to come together. So that's what I think makes the community so special. And I even look at all of us and how different, just the four of us, like the backgrounds that we have, you know, it helps us focus on the things that we have in common, you know, and even like the traditions from our ancestries that, you know, are different, but also like, what's the root that is actually very much the same? It's just the most beautiful.
It's love.
It's love.
It's love.
It's just beautiful.
One of the memories I have during B-Girl City, Artsin starts playing this flute. I just remember being in some far corner of the venue and I can hear this flute playing. And suddenly as I was walking, there was like a silence that came over the whole venue. And it was like, there were a couple hundred people there, just got quiet. And you just can hear this flute. It gives me chills like right now, just thinking about it, because it was just so, it was such a beautiful moment. Like, the jam's going, everybody's battles, it's like kids everywhere and like everything's going on. And then suddenly it's just, you hear this flute. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. So can you share how you learned to play the flute and how it helps you meditate?
Well, first I'll say that I would say that the flute is a form of medicine for your spirit. It naturally calls for you to be calm and listen. So many times I've played and that exact same thing happens where people just get quiet and it takes you somewhere else. It takes you to a different space in your mind. And because you probably haven't heard it before, the mind reacts like that when it sees something or hears something for the very first time. It's trying to be like, what is this right now? Music is, there's scientific reactions to it that it's doing that to you physically. And so you're trying to process, like, what is it? And then trying to process the reaction you're having physically to it. And then your spirit is hearing it at the same time. So it's waking up and being like, whoa, wait, what? All kind of things are happening to me right now. So really the only way to react is to chill out and be like, I need to sit with this for a second, you know? So it happens all the time. And I love it. There's times where I'm playing and I'm thinking like, this is so wild right now, you know, and I'm watching the reaction of the room and I can hear the peace and quiet. So it's beautiful for me from that end of being the performer or the person bringing that. I first got my flute in 1996. My mom gave me a flute out of nowhere, really. It wasn't like I was asking for one or nothing. She just was like, here's a flute, you know, I got you something. And I was like, okay, a flute, what? And I couldn't play it for like 3 years. I would try and it was just noise. Like, I was like, what is this, you know? And in 1999, I went to a jam in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And there was a performance by this guy named Mike 360. And he got on stage and he started beatboxing and playing the flute. And I was like, whoa, like, that's crazy. You know, like, I was like blown away. Something I'd never seen. I was so hyped. And immediately I went up to him and I was like, hey, I have a flute. I can't play it though, but I need to do that. Like, what? I need to be able to do that. And he was like, well, I could teach you a couple of things. And afterwards I met up with him and he showed me the first traditional flute playing. I know he was like, here, listen to this. And it was traditional flute playing. And it was the first time I ever heard it. And it was just so beautiful to me. I was like, wow, this is beautiful. And then he showed me a few things. And then from that point, I went back. I was living in Vegas at the time. I went back to Vegas. And it was weird because I picked up my flute and sound came out like something that I liked. And I was like, whoa, this is a trip. And after that, I would go to the mountains. There was this place called Red Rock and Mount Charleston. And I would just go there and just practice and practice and practice. Yeah, it was meditative for me. It was really life-changing for me. Like, really gave me time to like being with myself, looking at myself. Like, that was the like beginning stages of really focusing in on like, this is doing something for me and taking me, leading me somewhere. I didn't know where at the time. I knew that it was doing that for me. And I just spent a lot of time out there. And after that, I just got better and better. I just dedicated my life to just being able to play this flute. And what's kind of crazy is I'm not a trained musician. I've never done any type of music theory and any type of like how to read notes, write music or anything like that. I just pretty much, it's just me freestyling like all the time. I feel almost, I don't want to say blessed, but I feel almost lucky that I found this place where I could play and connect like that and being comfortable with it to do that in front of people. You know, and it's brought a confidence even in my writing. I kind of just channel something. It's just the special type of thing that I've gotten really comfortable with. Like, I've been telling people lately that, because people ask me, what's your writing process like when you write, you know? And I'm just like, you know what? I feel like the song's already written and I just got to find the words. I just look for the words and then it happens. Once I find like the first couple of lines, I'm gone. Like, the song is going to write itself. Comes at being comfortable with the flute, being able to play like that. And it all stems from that, like just channeling, just sitting with my mind and being like, I feel like that's what meditation should be, is you're not supposed to be thinking of what's gonna happen in meditation. You're supposed to like quiet the mind so much that something happens and you reach a certain point. So, you know, that's what the flute does for me in different aspects of my life. That allows me to almost be in a meditative state with the things that I'm doing, even with my dance and everything. I'm not a dancer that creates sets. I'm like, okay, I have these moves that I've created or these moves that I've learned, but when I go out, even if I wanna do this one thing, I might not be able to do it because the music is not gonna allow me to do it. And I will feel whack within myself if I force another thing, story to be told when the story is already telling me what it is. You know, so I just need to express the story at the moment. All of that is part of the meditation, is being in a meditative state in my walk of life.
So Carla, you recently started sharing your musical talent too. What motivated you to open up and share your music with the world?
Yeah, about that. The truth is that when I was a little girl, I used to play piano. That was kind of my thing. And I was always a little kid that I used to sing all the time and make my sister crazy and she would tell me to shut up. But it was always something that I wanted to do. And just, you know, it was just like in my heart to do. I used to work on music with different people in school, you know, like probably as early as middle school. Used to be involved in music in some way, shape, or form. And like I said, I used to play piano. My days of playing piano ended because when Hurricane Andrew hit in Miami, my family didn't, they couldn't afford to get me another piano at the time. So that's kind of where that ended. But just as I went through college, I used to, from time to time, work with people that were just in the very early stages of learning to be producers or do music themselves. So it's something that I had always done and dabbled. Like, my mom has tapes, you know, like of stuff that I had previously recorded. And it was one of those things that I always wanted to be able to at least have music that expressed myself and that was done at a level of quality and production that I could personally be proud of. I was never someone that cared about wanting to pursue it as an artist because I wanted to make it a career and I was someone that wanted to chase fame or whatever. That was never it. It was always a matter of wanting to create content that people could relate to, that it touched people on some level. And for me, it was always about really enjoying the collaborative process that happens when you work on music with someone. You know, in my family, it was be a doctor, be a lawyer, be an accountant, and anything outside of that was potentially risky business. You know, like I originally started off wanting to do psychology. My parents talked me out of that. You know, like I was like, okay, great. When I finish my quote unquote 4-year degree, then I'm going to go in and, you know, study music production. And again, it was like, no. Like that's not stable. So there was, you know, those things to kind of work through. But what I always did was seek out people to collaborate with. And a lot of those pursuits didn't end in productive partnerships for a variety of reasons. But I always liked to partner with other artists and help them in some way, right? So that kind of turned into helping with their marketing. Being with Artson for me was really great. So I've been working with him on his music pretty much the entire time that we've been together. I think it probably got more specific maybe in like 2015 or 2016. We would work on stuff behind the scenes, just messing around, jam sessions, whatever. And it just made me so crazy to feel like I had all these bits and pieces that felt like there was something there that I wanted to retain that was good. And just this frustration that I only ever had it as like a voice memo going through 2020 and COVID and everything, and just not really knowing what the future of the world was going to be. There's always been a kind of like this like suffocating feeling of never having finished that, putting out something that was my own voice, my own message, you know, and again, not to say that I do anything entirely by myself. Know your lane, know what you're good at, know what your strengths are, and know who you need to help you make it the best that it can be. And so, of course, after years of this, fortunately, we have a whole little collective of people that we work with, and that there's a great deal of trust. So even though in a lot of ways I tend to be a shy person when it comes to putting myself forward creatively, I feel like I've been able to do it in a really safe space, you know, with people that I love and that I know and that I trust. For me, again, it comes back to I have my career, which there's a lot of things that I want to be able to contribute and do in the world through my career. But I also am someone that does need to fulfill a creative outlet and a creative passion. And one of the things that Artson told me early on when we first met was how I show up within the community. And again, it's so easy for me to just sit back and just do me and just kind of fade into the background. And we were at this one jam in Vegas, and Phoenix was there. And he was kind of like checking me on some, it's important for her to see an older woman in the community still doing things, you know, like still breaking, still participating. So you break, and when we're at practice, like, you know, you do all this stuff, but then you get into public scenarios and you just allow yourself to shrink into a corner. And that doesn't send the right message to girls that are coming up. You know, like it kind of reinforces this idea that there's a drop-off point. You know, every person that does music doesn't have to be from a competitive perspective or being the best perspective, or you're trying to go pro at this, right? Like, and I think that sometimes we're so hell-bent on everyone being an influencer, you know, and this high level of, you know, everything that you do is because you're trying to go pro and make it. No, it's not that. But it also doesn't mean that we should not share it. So it's a little bit of therapy in that I need to get over my own personal hangups, you know, and be okay with sharing that out. So there's a lot of, and with music, it's easy to do that. Easier for me than just jumping into a cipher, because I can say what I want to say, upload it, hit send, and then like go, like whatever happens, like I did it, you know, and again, that's kind of it, right? So there's kind of like less pressure in the moment. So it's one of those things that the older that I get, I didn't grow up in a household that was like, hey, just try it and whatever you do is fine. That's cool. It was like, be perfect in everything that you do. Don't embarrass yourself. You know, don't make a fool out of yourself. Don't do things that are out of your lane. You know, don't take risks. I didn't come from a family that took risks. So the older I get, though, the more I've gotten more comfortable with just be okay being imperfect. Being 41 now, not feeling 41, I think it's exciting to feel like, no, like we can and we do. And the way that I show up in these spaces feels all the richer based on the perspective that I've gained over time. And that shows up, like, even with breaking, I go through periods where I do it a lot and then I take a break. And every time I do, it comes back with a different flavor and a different perspective. And music is the same way. So I'm doing it for me at the end of the day.
Yo, every day when I this love ain't no stopping it, cause we be rocking it, raising the vibe with it through the metropolis. People be jogging us, no need to cause of us, cause there's more than enough to share for all of us. So keep it conscious, be true and honest, together we all got this, cause it's all love. Do the talking when we're slowly body rocking. All the poppers, they be popping, and the fly girls, they be locking. But no matter how they moving, you and me, we always grooving. In the moon, you feel so soothing. Kiss my hips and I be cool. We two stepping and we blessing. Ain't no guessing what's the lesson. Pick me up when I be stressing. I don't wonder if you're messing. When you call me, I'll come running. Full of love, no need for fussing. Always trusting in together that we'll weather any weather. If I'm wrong, am I confessing? Never make me feel the lesser. When I'm mad, you keep it gracious. Your goodness is contagious. Your words are very conscious, gentle and honest. Remind me that we got this, cause it's all love.
Say though that deep down inside, she really wanted to be like this badass gangster rapper. Sometimes I'm like, yo, like, what? You wrote this?
Like, oh my god, like, that's
all. That's kind of, you sure?
Like, I can see that. I'm a Florida girl, what can I say? You know? But and again, in the spirit of we are not one-dimensional, we are like multifaceted, you know, situations bring out different personalities, and we gotta be okay expressing that, you know? Like, better it comes out that way than it comes out in a different way, you know? So, yeah. Candy, I'll have to send you some other things.
She'll be featured on one of my songs in probably this coming year. We did our first song together, like, her featured on one of my albums.
Yo, that's all I ever wanted, dude. Like I'm gonna be okay, like if we're gonna be really real here, right? Like, so definitely wanting to get to the point where like his opinion, like nothing else matters in the world, right? Like I don't care what anyone else says, like if I wholeheartedly want his objective opinion, and if he tells me something is good or needs improvement, I wholeheartedly take it. But he's the one person in the world who I want to impress. You know, just being in love with him like I am, and I'm like, I wonder if we could ever do a collabo. That would be the most, you know, like talk about like, how do I measure my success? You know, getting Artson to ask me to do a track with him, I didn't ask him to do a track with him. I was like, I'm just gonna wait and see if he ever asks. Like if I ever do something good enough where, you know, suddenly he asks me to do a track with him. So when he finally did, I was like,
that is so sweet.
So Carla, you've mentioned a couple of times, you know, that you're an expert in marketing and you're also the director of content strategy. What advice could you give content creators like ourselves?
It's a lifelong journey to be. I'm one of those, I never assume that I'm an expert in anything, but I will say that I've had years of experience. I try to approach things with an open mind, a lot of objectivity, and a willingness to learn like what works, what doesn't work, and understanding why it works or it doesn't work. And having the right people around you is important. Having a sense of purpose is important. How can I leverage the things that I'm learning to benefit my team so that we can achieve the goals that we have to create the kinds of opportunities for ourselves that we want? And how can I use this to help benefit my community, right? So skills that I'm learning along the way, how can I take what I'm learning here, look at what is happening with arts and music and optimize it, improve it,
you know, and likewise use what I'm doing with his music to further drive what I want the company to do, to build the experience on things that I'm not getting to do because of the way that, you know, the company is set up and the priorities they have, to show that having an idea versus being able to show an example are two very different things. So I do a lot of cross-pollination, and the successes that I build in one, I apply to the other, and vice versa. Start small. Start small and start close to home and do some research. It's great to focus on the things that you're passionate on, because those are the things that you're naturally going to be inclined to spend more time on, to do the research on, to be better rounded on, you know, and that way it doesn't become something that feels overwhelming, or, you know, you're going to lose interest in, because it is going to be a lot of work one way or another. I think it's important to understand your audience, create content that is going to resonate and connect with them, right? Like, what's the key message? Always focus on the key message. What are you really trying to say with this piece? What's the point? Why should somebody care? There's a lot of content creators out there, and there's always going to be people that are doing similar things that you want to do. Don't be discouraged by that, you know, because again, it's all about finding your own voice and how you tell the story. And we all have a specific perspective and a specific lens, you know, and again, somebody out there is going to identify specifically with you and the way that you tell your stories. I would say be organized, have a content plan, you know, that is manageable for yourself. Know yourself, know your style, know your strengths, and, you know, work with it, and also plan how to mitigate some of those things. And I would say be willing to learn from others, be willing to collaborate with others, know your strengths, and know what are the things that might be better done if you collaborate and partner with someone else.
I want you to tell me the story about Shiro Collective.
I've learned so much about myself through my job. How you show up in the face of challenges it tells you a lot. And we spend so much time in our work environments that it literally dominates a lot of what we do. So I've grown through my organization because I've always let my work speak for itself. And I've always believed in what we could achieve. So long story short, I went from being a marketing manager to being moved over to overseeing content strategy, and then eventually over the creative and content strategy teams together. And now brand for North America is also following under my group. And I've implemented things like we instituted our own photography team, our own video team, our own interactive program, et cetera. So always someone that's pushed the needle, pushed innovation, pushed for the company. So it's, I think, like, just because of the way that I've shown up in those circles, I ended up being nominated to be one of the founding members of their Women in Leadership Council at the company. That, first of all, was like a huge honor, but it also kind of like woke me up a little bit, because I was like, I never set out to have the career that I have. I only ever wanted to be a writer, a producer, tell great stories, you know, but I think when you are sitting in situations and, you know, this doesn't work because of this, this work environment needs to change because of this, then you look around and you're like, the cavalry is not showing up, right? Like, someone's got to do this. I guess this means we just got to do this for ourselves. And so that's kind of always been part of the growth path. But recognizing that I actually did make a difference and being put in that situation, it was like, okay, so I've shown that I'm a leader within this organization. It then made me ask myself, okay, but how have I shown up within the community? Because honestly, for a long time, it was, I would do things very small on the side and within our small circle of peers. But I recognized that, unlike Candy, I had kind of faded away into the background and had kind of become known as, oh, Artson's wife, you know, which I love that, but there's obviously a lot more to it. And so with Shiro Collective, for me, it was, how can I show up within the community and contribute in my own way, right? And for me, that came down to wanting to make sure that the role of the female lens being shared as well, because those are some of the things that we've been, there's so much progress that, quite frankly, has happened in the last 2 years. I also want to just preface with saying that, because when I started Shiro Collective versus what I see happening currently in the community, it's a little bit different. There's a lot more women content creators right now, where that wasn't necessarily as much the case at that point, but it was more about telling the stories of the women that have helped make community. Is it was about not just talking about the competitors, you know, who were the promoters or whatever the case, that were kind of like the superstars. It was more about talking about what you guys are doing right now that I love, right? Like those relationships that are actually the social fabric of the community, how hip hop has shaped who we are as individuals, right? And how we advocate for the community and break down presumptions about how people think people from hip hop are, right? There's all these preconceived ideas, there's all these stereotypes, you know, but every time I walk into a meeting, they learn something a little bit different. But it's really about gender balance, bringing people together, bringing women together, celebrating women, but also recognizing the men that support women as they continue to grow and excel, and like, you know, passing the baton to the next generation, making sure that we have a balanced perspective, all of those things, right? This sisterhood of folks that I would like to see come together and in a way that just like supports each other, recognizes each other, and is there to partner with anyone that wants to. Because I want us to have our own heroes. I want us to see people from the community in the same way that, you know, they hold up NFL players and NBA players and Oprah and whatever. Like, I want us to have all of our own heroes and our own celebrities within it, right? So just wanting to be able to produce content that is at that level so that people absorb it in that way, just to, you know, just build that pride for them. So that those are kind of the things that I look for.
Congratulations on that. And I hope to see more of that, actually. What do you look up to and who inspires you?
I think that's always changing, but I would say right now it's the people around me, the circle, the small circle that has been built, people that have learned to set a goal and do it, and people that learn to do it fast. I feel also too, like within the circle that we have, we've all been doing these things, but we all kind of reached a certain level at the same time. We got to this point where we were all like, well, you're dope for doing that, you're dope for doing that. And then we kind of come together now, where before it was, we were all like trying to get to this place, but we all reached it. And I was like, boom, we're here. So I look up to those people that have continued to keep doing it, you know, continue to push towards their dreams or push towards their accomplishments. And it's like, okay, now that we're all here, like those people are the ones that are inspiring me. And also I've come to a point where like I inspire myself. I look at myself and I'm like, I can inspire myself. Like there's nothing wrong with that. You know, like it's okay to feel that, you know, and to feel like it's inspiring. I can look back right now and be like even just this year, I can be like, damn, I put out 6 albums this year. Like that's mad inspiring, you know, like that's crazy. So how am I going to top that? Like I'm looking at myself, like what's next that's going to be better? But I'm a little weird like that, because I also like go try to accomplish things that I'm scared of doing. You know, I walk towards my fear. Even the way I record or I write and stuff, I put myself in positions that other people might think is crazy. Like something like, I'm going to book the studio next week and I'm going to record 5 songs, but I haven't even written them yet. And then I'll do that to myself. And then I'll call a studio and I'm like, yo, I want to book the studio next week. And then I'll be like, that week, I'm like, I got to write these songs. And today I got to make sure I do this. And I only have 2 days left and I'm 3 songs behind, or, you know, and I put myself in these positions. And then when I accomplish it, it's so inspiring to myself that I did it. I'm like, ugh, I did this, you know. So I've gotten like to that point to just really be motivated by myself and be inspired by myself. Cause you know, I've throughout my whole life, I've been inspired by other people. Having that drive within yourself, that's important. You know, like I feel like you can even see it in the scene or whatever, or amongst, I guess, dancers or whatever. Someone that has heart is gonna last a long time. You know, someone that has talent, they might not necessarily stick around forever because they're good right away. It's natural for them. It can almost become boring because they feel that they're good. But somebody that has heart and isn't necessarily the greatest, they're gonna dedicate themselves and their heart is gonna shine. You know, even for myself, I always say this, like when I teach dance and stuff, like I was not the best around my friends. You know, I was around Style Elements early on, like 98, when they were like just coming off of Battle of the Year and they were like the kings of the world. And I wasn't good. You know, I was always doing it, but I wasn't at their level, like nowhere near. But I had a certain heart and drive that allowed me to learn so much. And because of that, I paid attention to so many details of what I was learning, because I had to like figure it out, where they were just, oh, I could just do this, whatever it was, you know? And me, I was like, what? I'm trying to figure out where their hand is. Why is it they lifted up or whatever the case is? And all those details, at the end of the day, I learned a certain step really well, where I mastered it really well, you know? But I can look back and be like, but that was only because I had heart and drive and determination. And in reality, I was inspiring myself the whole time. Like, I need to get up. I need to do this. I need to get it. It's only up to me. Someone can inspire you and you might never do it. You might never try it. They inspire you, you know, like, oh, that's so inspiring. I might never do it, but it's inspiring. But when it's yourself and you're like, then you're like, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to accomplish this. So yeah, I got to that point.
Well, clearly I am greatly inspired by Artsin. I really respect that he always knew exactly what he wanted to do and was unwavering despite what anyone else said. You know, I definitely feel like I grew up in kind of what I would consider very like specifically, I always blame the Filipino side. I really do. Like this whole like hierarchy is like, you know, you must make your family proud, right? Like, you know, you feel the constraints or whatever the case is. So the fact that, you know, I feel like there was a lot of things earlier on in my life that I did or didn't do because that's what was expected of me, regardless of whether I really wanted to or not. And if it wasn't for Artsin, I probably wouldn't be at peace with myself or satisfied with the course of life that I had taken. So he's always my number one inspiration.
What is hip hop to you?
I would say hip hop is my home. It's my love. It's my purpose is probably what I would say. Like everything in my life kind of guides me back to the values that I've learned, the way that it's helped me connect with myself, the way that I find peace and, you know, the way that I want to have an impact in the world, you know? So it's all of those things. I feel like I married hip hop. That's how much I love it.
I love you. I would say that for me, hip hop is it's a living spirit that has been here forever. And it's gonna constantly evolve to help guide people, to give them the tools to express themselves so they can grow and make it through this world with a happiness and a joy. It's something that's really special. And we're lucky to be living in a time right now and have that, especially with everything going on right now. I feel with everything that's happening right now, it's helping us to remember, to appreciate it, you know, to appreciate, you know, the connections that it's given the people, you know, because that's what it's about, bringing the people together. And right now we're separated, you know, we're separated from each other. So it's allowing us to remember that, you know, appreciate this thing, hip hop, that we have, you know, appreciate it, because something like this can happen where it separates us, you know, and it's not about that. It's about bringing the people together. So that's what hip hop is to me. It's a special movement that we're living in at this time.
Thank you so much to our guests, Carla and Artsin, for taking the time and being so open while sharing your perspective with us.
Some of the gems we took away from this interview were:
cultural differences should not separate us from each other, but rather cultural diversity brings a collective strength that can benefit all of humanity. If we are to preserve culture, we must continue to create it.
Whether they are raised in indigenous or modern culture, people desire to have their intuitive gifts approved, acknowledged, confirmed, and fully realized.
Healthy relationships make each other into a better person, someone who can improve you, adds to the relationship. Encourage each other to pursue individual hobbies and passions. Team up together to accomplish tasks. Both agree on the same values and have similar mindsets.
Our theme music was beatboxed by Dennis DeMenis and produced by CD.
A big shout out to the brothers from Switzerland.
The background music was produced by Tucky Grano. A big thank you to Abroski from Providence.
Much love to Jamar Hopkins on his newborn son. Welcome to the Parent Club.
Our podcast basically runs on coffee. To keep our show running, you can support by buying us a coffee through the link in our show notes. A huge thank you to Power Surge, director of All The Way Live Foundation, for all the great work you do for the community, making space for equity, inclusivity, and hip-hop culture.
We would love to get your feedback, questions, and any suggestions you might have. You can reach out to us on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook at SolidarityLLC or via email solidarityllc@gmail.com.
If you like today's show, please tell a friend about our podcast. Or as Five Dog would say,
tell your mother, tell your father, send a telegram.
In our next episode, we have the brothers Dennis and Sidi Marian. Sidi is a 2-time world beatbox champion, international beatbox judge, and music producer. Dennis, aka Dennis the Menace, is a 3-time Swiss beatbox champion, 2-time Battle of the Year Swiss champion, and represents the Ghost Rocks crew.
Don't forget to subscribe to the show and leave a rating and review.
See you on our next episode. Thank you for listening to our podcast.
No, seriously though, thank you. I am Candy.
I am DJ Razorcut.
And this is Souls of Hip Hop.